Okay, we continue in Unit 8. This is Lesson 3. We want to discuss when things go badly wrong for banks, okay? Everything that we have talked about in this section helps us to explain why central bankers must be skilled and knowledgeable individuals with a good grasp of both economics and the workings of financial markets. Still, we have essentially been describing the job of a technocrat, right? Central bankers really earn their salaries in abnormal rather than normal times. So let's look back at 2007 and stretch into 2008. The United States and other countries began to experience the financial crisis that was similar to those that were experienced in the Great Depression. The crisis seemed to begin innocently enough with a decrease in the housing market, right? This left some people unable or unwilling to cover their mortgage payments. But because of the way financial markets work, it became more difficult for lenders to work out which of their assets were non-performing, which means that which one of those assets were unlikely to be repaid. So as a result, the financial markets froze up, so banks didn't know what to do. You know, some of these banks were loaning on balloon mortgages, or you know, these subprime mortgages where they were adjustable based on interest rates, right? So we just discussed how the Federal Reserve raises interest rates, and as they raise interest rates, banks have to, you know, raise rates relative to the amount that the Federal Reserve is raising rates, right? So, and from, 2000, well, really we were in a boom cycle from, early 90s to 2007, 2008, a great economic expansion. In early 2000s, 2002, 2003, 2004, the economy grew really, really fast. There was a lot of tax cuts, a lot of deregulation, and so in the housing market, banks were seeing that asset prices were creeping up very, very, very rapidly, right? So there was an opportunity for banks to make loans on housing, package up these loans, and sell them into the secondary market. So when they did that, they were able to get those loans off their books and pass them on to somebody else. And so they started making more and more and more and more loans. This equated to the subprime mortgage environment, okay? So during this period, asset prices were going up very, very fast, exponentially, and a lot of people were buying and selling, flipping houses, making profits as asset prices continued to go up. The banks wanted to make more and more loans, so they started bringing on more and more risky people and making loans that were based on interest rates that were adjustable. They were moving. They weren't fixed. So the reason why a lot of people had to lose their homes, or they had to felt like they didn't want to pay for their homes, is because, you know, they started out with a $700 mortgage payment in the first 2 years, and the next thing you know, they're paying $1,000, $1,200, $1,500 a month for the same house because they had an adjustable interest rate. So this is why a lot of people started not paying their mortgages and getting foreclosed on. So this really seized up the banks because they were so heavily weighted in how much loans they were making towards housing. They weren't able to determine which of these assets were non-performing or performing, and a lot of these assets were packaged together and sold off to another bank, so it made it even harder. This is why the banking system got froze up. So part of the Fed's response was an aggressive use of the tools that we described in this section. For example, the Fed reduced the federal funds rate down to 0.25%. At that point, the Fed had just about reached the limit of what was possible with monetary stimulus. So basically, the federal funds rate is what banks in the market base their interest rates on. So the federal funds rate got taken down to 0.25%, not even 1%, but 0.25%, basically zero interest rates. They couldn't take them to zero, and you can't take interest rates negative. Well, you could take interest rates negative, but if you make interest rates negative when depositors deposit money into a bank, then that money, as soon as they deposit it, automatically loses value because interest rates are negative. So you are going to be penalized for depositing funds into a bank if interest rates are negative. All right, so the Fed took the interest rates down to 0.25%, a quarter of a percent, as low as they possibly could take it, right, without really going negative. So they had no more ammunition. They lowered interest rates as low as possible, right? So they were limited what they could do moving forward as far as stimulus for the economy at this time. All right, the problem with nominal rates, you know, they can't go below zero because cash has a nominal interest rate of zero. If you keep a dollar bill from this year to next year, it is worth a dollar next year. Therefore, it would always just be better to keep cash rather than to invest in an asset with negative nominal return. The Fed had hit what is known as zero lower bound. They couldn't go any further. 0.25 is as low as they could get. Cash has a nominal interest rate of zero, as we just explained. A dollar is worth a dollar today and next year. Even though it was at zero, at the zero lower bound, the Federal Reserve still had other options, right? In normal circumstances, it operates in the economy by buying and selling short-term government debt, one of the other assets in the economy, but these were highly abnormal circumstances, and it is possible for the Fed to buy and sell other assets as well. This is what the Fed did. During the crisis, the Fed started purchasing many other assets, such as commercial paper stocks, bonds, inside the financial market. So they started buying common stocks and, firm debt. In other words, instead of just lending to banks, the Fed started lending directly to firms in the economy. Central banks in some other countries, such as the United Kingdom, pursued similar policies. Explaining what happened in 2008 involves understanding the actions of the Fed, but it requires many other tools as well.